It gives me supreme pleasure to have my cherished colleague of the shamanic arts and scholar of anthropological approaches to disclosing the heart, soul, and wisdom body of Peruvian curanderismo, and co-author of Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, Dr. Bonnie Glass Coffin, beloved friend, a visionary and bridge builder who believes that educating the whole person, head and heart, should be at the core of a liberal arts education. She has been inspired to build these bridges because of the transformative experiences that she has had while studying with Peruvian shamans for more than 30 years. She has spoken about this vision with university presidents, provosts, and deans, as well as students and her anthropology colleagues at places like the President's Inaugural Lecture at Utah State University, the American Anthropological Association, and the annual meeting of the American Association of Colleges and Universities. She has written about this vision and her experiences of deep personal transformation in academic venues, including anthropology and humanism, anthropology of consciousness, the International Journal of Transpersonal Studies, and in popular venues, including Shaman's Drum and Sacred Fire magazine. She has developed and piloted course curricula that celebrate this whole person, quotes unquote, approach to learning while providing tools for inner exploration and development. And she has been awarded both the Case Carnegie Professor of the Year for the state of Utah in 2004, the Eleanor Roosevelt Global Citizenship Award in 2010, and the Dean's Giraffe Award for, quote, sticking your neck out, which is characteristic of my beloved sister. So I wish I would have been at that award ceremony. She has written two books about the work with Peruvian shamanism, The Gift of Life, Female Spirituality and Healing in Northern Peru, and Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, co-authored with Don Oscar Miro Quesada, who is conducting this fascinating interview. Aside from her extensive accomplishments as a scholar and also student of these very rich healing traditions, Bonnie is just a person who lives with an open heart, who is committed to keeping it green, to allowing herself never to be the expert. And I hold an infinite indebtedness to her for allowing me the space to share my story as a narrative in Lessons in Courage. It is a deep honor, sister, to welcome you to the Shift Network webinar and have you share your wisdom with all of our beautiful sisters and brothers online. Welcome, sister.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, my beloved brother Don Oscar. It's with a wonderful introduction, I feel very humbled to hear you speak those kind words to me, and it's just a thrill to be able to be here with you today. So I look forward to our discussion.
Well, it's quite evident that synchronicities abound in the way we both came together and collaborated in the writing of this book, but more importantly and more personally touching to me is the fact that you embraced the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of cross-cultural shamanism with such passion and deep respect for what it brought to the modern Western world. And we can explore that together as to you being an endorsed mentor of the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, healing arts, as well as an initiate of Peruvian traditional curandero practices of the northern coast, which resulted in your magnificent book, The Gift of Light. So I'd like to start out, first of all, by honoring the synchronicity that you spent some formative years living in Peru. And could you speak a little bit about how you got to end up in the northern coast of Peru and how that experience may have influenced your career choice as an anthropologist?
I would be delighted to. And as I've said on other occasions, the story sounds a lot different if I'm narrating it from the past to the present or looking from the present to the past. I'm so glad that you brought up the issue of synchronicities. Because now when I look back on my life, I realize, of course, that every step along the way was completely and perfectly orchestrated. Of course, at the time, I had no idea what I was doing. But now I see, in looking back, that I had everything that I need. And what I didn't have, I gained through the course of my life and continue to do so. I went to Peru as a high school exchange student when I was 18 years old in 1975. I did not choose Peru. I did not choose any country. I participated with a group called American Field Service, AFS, that I would just like to put a plug in for as a fantastic organization that facilitates intercultural exchanges for high school students through over 80 countries in the world, and they have been doing this work for decades. But the way they do this work is they take the application from the student, and they take applications from families, and they have some sort of mystical matchmaking that occurs in offices in New York City, where they basically put students together with families based on the characteristics that they speak of in their applications, who they think will resonate. And so in my case, the family that they chose for me happened to be in Peru. And so I went to Peru. I spent 11 months living with a Peruvian family on the north coast in Trujillo. And I went to a Peruvian high school. I learned the language. I became immersed in the culture and really fell in love with the people. I hadn't fallen in love with shamanism, although I was always a seeker in my own heart and in my own spiritual life. But I had a very... I had an experience during that time when I was in Peru where a very dear friend of mine who happened to be the English teacher at the local high school invited me to accompany her on a journey to visit some other parts of the country. Along the way, she noted that it was the anniversary of her grandmother's death. I just simply asked, as any good friend would do, "What did your grandmother die of? I'm so sorry to hear that." And she said very simply, "Well, she was killed by a witch," which blew my mind because I thought that this was a woman who I understood completely. I was convinced that beneath that sort of veneer of culture, we're all basically all the same. And to learn that her paradigm about life and death and health and illness was so different than mine really awakened me to want to know more. I came home. I studied anthropology at the college level. When it was time for me to go to graduate school, I... was looking for programs. I happened to make a phone call, to UCLA, knowing only that I wanted to go back to Trujillo and that I wanted to study shamanism. And I had been referred to a wonderful man by the name of Johannes Wilbert, who is somewhat of a godfather of shamanic studies in Latin America.
Certainly.
Anyway, who answered the phone when I called to ask after Dr. Wilbert was one of his graduate students, Donald Geroliman, who explained to me that he had just returned from Trujillo doing a study of shamanism and that, no, his advisor wasn't in, but he was sure that he would be willing to return my call. And I said, that's the place for me. And so that's how I deepened my studies of shamanism, returned to Peru many times, decided that I wanted to work with women healers because their voices were very underrepresented in the work of curanderismo on the North Coast, and that's what led to my first book and, of course, my dissertation and my life in academe. So that's it in a nutshell.
Well, what in a nutshell, there are so many levels to the synchronicity that you spoke of, especially regarding how it seems that regardless of our most conscious efforts, we must yield to the orchestration of these synchronistic encounters in order to truly fulfill our soul's destiny on this planet. And the luminaries that you've mentioned by name that are so respected in the field of shamanic arts, obviously we're also being influenced by the unseen dimensions known to our shamanic ancestors that set up these encounters, these very serendipitous meetings, just like occurred when Douglas Sharon, also the author of The Wizard of the Four Winds, which is a classic which sparked deep interest in the study of Peruvian curanderismo through highlighting El Tuno, or Eduardo Calderón's life that you well know of, having met his family yourself down there, recommended that I invite you as a keynote speaker for our fifth international gathering of the Heart of the Healer Foundation. And in that experience that you articulate so beautifully at the beginning of our book, the field, the morphic resonance of what this webinar's title is, Universal Shamanism, was anchored within the ceremonial ground that you entered. Would you be kind enough, Bonnie, to just share with our listeners that first experience of yours and how the principle of universal shamanism became palpable in your own experience?
I would love to. And first, thanks for the shout-out to Doug, who was actually my first introduction to shamanism on the North Coast. The first mesada I ever attended was with Doug Sharon in 1982 with El Tuno, with Eduardo. And I'm actually he and I were compadres along the way as well. So yes, Doug has certainly been a part of the instrumental synchronicity. And of course, Douglas was with us when he and I were both at that fifth international gathering. And I just recall what the experience that I recount in the book, again, as I mentioned a minute ago, you know, I think I've always been a seeker. And one of the things about being anthropologists that may not resonate so much with your listening audience, except those who are anthropologists, is we tend to be very marginalized human beings, sometimes through self-choices, sometimes through our own choices. But the very act of having immersed ourselves in a completely foreign culture for long periods of time and felt the deep change that occurs when one immerses oneself, and then coming home to a place where one can never return to, means that we're sort of between two worlds. And that was certainly my situation, and I had always felt between two worlds, and I had always felt like I was looking for a home, looking for a family, looking for a homeland. Certainly Peru is an adopted family, an adopted homeland, but I was looking for something that I could more viscerally feel as my own. And I had a deep spiritual yearning as well. I told my advisor, Johannes Wilbert, that what I really wanted to do was to be like a Carlos Castaneda who studied women, you know, and from a very experiential perspective, because, of course, my advisor was one of Carlos Castaneda's advisors as well. But that was my yearning. So I give that as a backstory. When I walked in to the gathering at Michigan, first the first thing I remember is your welcome, which was so warm and so inviting and very much like, you know, old friends and family coming back together again who had not seen each other for a very long time. That was the first thing that I noticed, was that incredible bear hug that you are so famous for, and feeling very, very at ease. And then when we met in circle, first of all, I felt so cared for and protected and loved and honored because of your willingness to put academic elders as well as indigenous elders up front and you know, to give us sort of special honoring kinds of invitations. And when I went up the hill to where the Pachacuti Mesa carriers had set out the eight mesas that were anchoring the gathering, and just stepped into that room, what I talk about it in the prologue of our book is just how the scent and the vistas, the sights, the sounds, just overwhelmed me with their beauty. And I remember walking around that space and just feeling immersed in the aesthetic wonder and in the beauty of what a walk on this earth could be. And I couldn't have even articulated it at that time. It was just this beautiful kind of space that I stepped into, and I wanted more of it. And then during the closing ceremonies, or the night before the closing ceremony, where I just felt this yearning in my heart because I felt like I was coming home to this beautiful family who was gathered there, and over the course of the weekend I had felt so at ease and so loved and so connected in a way that I had never really felt before, and I was so sad that I was going to have to leave that. And you came to me in my dream time and basically said, you know, I feel this yearning in your heart, and in fact, if you are really committed to stepping in a new way and to being willing to open yourself, I promise that, you know, tomorrow your world is going to begin to look differently. And indeed, the next day, there was this closing ceremony where there was a feather that was presented to me, and this feather had a lot of significance because of some previous things that had happened in my life, and I realized it, that it was a quill that was my charge to sort of take up the quill and to begin writing and about what I would be willing to also participate in and deeply experience, and that somehow something was going to come through me in a way that I didn't quite understand, and all I had to do was say yes. And so that I did. I said yes, and that's where we're at as a result of you taking me under your wing and allowing me the beautiful time of apprenticeship and allowing this beautiful work together to continue to flower, most recently in the production of our co-authored book. So thank you.
Wow, what a story. And once again, the touching into the multidimensional levels of encounter that led up to that moment of me recognizing you, first of all, when we spoke on the phone, that you were the woman that had been shown to me in a dream of my own that, you know, would make a significant contribution to bringing the awareness of our Pachacuti Mesa tradition, shamanic arts, into a global state of consciousness, and through your quill. So I had been saving this condor tail, it was a female condor tail quill, for over 7 years. I had it on my Banco Maestro, on my main altar at home, being the custodian of it until the right time came. So I was prepared when you participated in the closing ceremony to extend this quill to your care, to your custody, as a symbol of trust and deep appreciation for the dreaming becoming manifest. And it has continued, as you say, in this way. We have grown, blossomed, and I don't know whether I took you under my wing or you took me under yours. It makes no difference. We're both flying like the condor and eagle in the sky. So it's good medicine all around, sister. So to make the listening audience aware of what we're talking about as the Pachacuti Mesa, it is a term from the Quechua dialect of the Andes of Peru. Pachacuti means literally world reversal or cosmic transformation. Pacha, world, space, time, place. Ultimately, it's better understood as you would the Tibetan notion of a bardo or a state of consciousness, a world that is a dreaming. And kuti, change, transformation, which is the only constant in life. All of shamanic healing and initiation is a path of transformation. And that is why, Bonnie, your contributions to the field of the Pachakuti Mesa, and I say that with a double entendre, because a field means a campo, a field of action, a field in which transformation of a healing nature that restores our wholeness can take place. And it centers around an altar ground, meticulously arranged and configured according to our ancestral people's cosmovision and worldview. And so I say this as an initiation to the listening audience of what this is. And it leads into the following question, my love, which is, you are renowned as probably the top scholar of female curanderismo, northern coastal female curanderismo in the world. And you're respected for that. And your book, Gift of Life, articulates that knowledge in such a beautiful way. And you've mentioned to me that until you were exposed to the Pachakuti Mesa, you were still an anthropologist, observing from the outside, trying to be unadulterated in your objectivity. And when you encountered the Pachakuti Mesa healing altar, things changed. First that time in Michigan, at the Fifth International Gathering, and subsequently here in my home when we did individual work. When you take in the Mesa as a personal ground of your own transformation, and you compare it to the traditional altar grounds you've witnessed, let's say with El Tuno, with Eduardo Calderón, and the predominantly male traditional practice in Peru, how does the Pachakuti Mesa, number one, this is two parts of this question, how does the Pachakuti Mesa, how is it able to embrace the powers of the feminine more than the mesas you've experienced in traditional northern Peruvian mesadas? And number two, do you feel that if this is so, that it embraces the feminine more than these others, how that is a contribution to the honoring of feminine medicine on a global scale? And take as long as you want to answer this, my good sister.
Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic question. And I've been thinking about this and feeling into it for a while, particularly because the feminine has always, as you mentioned, been one of the sort of driving forces of me wanting to expand a bridge building, if you will, between traditions and also allow for the voice of the feminine to come through. And certainly, as you mentioned, you know, my own deepening in the tradition as a participant rather than just as an observer absolutely occurred as a result of allowing myself to sort of just sigh deeply and just breathe deeply a sense of welcoming, and to be able to sort of put the observer hat on the peg for a little bit and to feel myself embraced by community. And I think that's really probably the nugget right there, is the way the Pachakuti Mesa is built around restoring sacred relationship and building community that is based on, as you so nimbly put it, right action, which is born of compassional spiritual wisdom, which unites. And that, of course, is, as you say, encoded into the field, into the ground, into the heart of the Pachakuti Mesa, that sense of restoration of sacred relationship, of awakening to spiritual wisdom, and of communing with the natural powers of the universe, and particularly of the earth. I love the way that the Pachacuti Mesa is of the earth and restores our relationship to the earth so that we grow from the earth and reach for the stars. And that, in essence, is what I was feeling that moment when I walked into the altar ground there in Michigan, was that sense of the garden, the Pachacuti Mesa as a garden. And the five-part sort of configuration, the mandala-type spiral of the configuration of the Pachacuti Mesa with each of the directions oriented so deeply in so many as a multivalic kind of, you know, embodiment of everything from the forces and powers of the earth, of the waters, of the sky, of the sun, of the, you know, etheric center, everything from the powers to the tutelary animals that are associated with each direction, to the attributes of the way that we become human through right action, through opening our hearts to compassionate service, through opening our spirits and our souls, I should say, to receive the light of spirit, through opening our minds to being able to distinguish between the chatter of, you know, the monkey mind, and to be able to really understand mentalism and the power of thought, and then moving to the center. All of these things are encoded in the Mesa. For one thing, a five-part structure is very feminine, right?
Exactly.
As we talk about in our book, you know, we talk about communing and consecrating and composing and connecting and cooperating as being the key ritual actions that we do as humans in order to come more deeply back into a space of awareness of our wholeness and into a space of sacred reciprocity of Aini with the world of our ancestors and of the natural world and all of our tutelaries. We talk about that five-part progression, that five-part spiral that leads us inward to ourselves. And as I was reflecting back on what I was sharing in my first book, The Gift of Life, it's also about a five-part awakening. It's about accepting what is. It's about accepting the perfect present moment and coming into a place of communing or accepting that place where we are. It's about consecrating ourselves as holy, as we talk about in the Pachacuti Mesa, which is very much about cleansing and purifying and coming into right relationship with that sort of, unfortunately, women are often motivated, or I shouldn't say motivated, we are destructively influenced by self-contempt, as much as men are often, I think, held back by pride. Women tend to be held back by contempt. And so we have to cleanse and purify our thoughts and our feelings to be able to forgive ourselves, right? Which I very much parallels the consecration that we do in the second step as we're moving around the Pachacuti Mesa. As we compose sacred rituals, as we're, again, our listening audience will definitely understand as they read our book, you know, how each chapter is related to these five C's that I'm talking about, and we do these kinds of things in a perfect order. But as we come to where we're composing, you know, rituals of sacred relationship, that's very much like what I talk about in my first book. That's about experiencing and moving deeper into a place where we are willing to experience as women ourselves as sacred. As we connect, we also choose to relinquish the role of victim and become instead empowered by our ability to choose the way we perceive our relationship to the world. And as we cooperate, which of course is the fifth C in our five C's of the Pachacuti Mesa. In my experience that I write about in The Gift of Life, it's about redefining ourselves as relational, as living in relation, and as coming into perfect relationship and honoring the fact that as women, that's something we generally know how to do pretty well, but one of the things we often forget is that that is sacred. That's a sacred act. So for me, I think the Pachacuti Mesa, I feel the Pachacuti Mesa, is very much about feminine medicine, from its very five-part structure to the way that it really emphasizes and focuses on accepting life as it is, on forgiving ourselves and feeling ourselves as sacred, on deeply experiencing every perfect present moment, on deeply connecting at all levels, and on being able to redefine ourselves in the world as implicitly relational rather than as being individuals. I see that as the gift of the Pachacuti Mesa. I see that as the gift of feminine healing and a correspondence between the work that I've done in my entire life.
Beautifully expressed, sister. Thank you so much. And I feel the activation of that relational, feminine medicine ground within your own vocation, within your own calling to take this into mainstream education and allow it to be a transformational catalyst for truly making learning a field of transformative self-discovery, much like the ancient wisdom carriers of the original civilizations on this planet were fond of doing within their halls of learning. And it is fundamental to bring this relational field back into our institutions of higher education especially, but also within the public school system, which is so directional rather than relational, so much about passing the test, scoring the highest grade, getting the right job, having the goals set in such a linear, domineering manner. There's the absence of spiral, of sphere, of dodecahedron, of icosahedron, of octahedron, of tetrahedron, and of cube, which correspond also to the five directions of the Mesa, which are all the perfect divisions of that sphere of creation that is at the heart of being woman, for that is the womb, and that is the place of gestation of our new global culture. So your contribution, sister, to making this happen is a joy in my life, and I bow to your presence. And I say this not all gushy-mushy, but as a true level of respect for who you are, Bonnie. And thank you. Thank you for getting the big picture, you know, for grokking it. So
I love that term. Yes, I grok you.
So if something's up that you'd like to comment on, please feel free to do so. And after that, I have a couple more little questions, if you don't mind.
You bet. Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for that. And I feel exactly the same way. And I wanted, since we're talking about that mutual bowing of respect, you know, which really is at the heart of sacred relationship, I wanted to just share the other piece that you know intimately well because you were there and assisting its orchestration, but also because I've written somewhat about it. But it's the other piece that was able to move me from a place of really being an outsider or feeling, I was never an outsider, but feeling like somehow I was disconnected, feeling like I was an outsider, clinging to the scientific method, clinging to observational empiricism as a tool to try and figure out how to get closer to that which I was missing. And really what I was looking for was connection and relationship. And the moment for me that really was the peak, I guess, experience, as we talk about sometimes in religious and spiritual contexts, was at your home in South Florida in February of 2006, just around the time of my 49th birthday, where we had a ceremony together. And one of the things I have spoken about in my work and my own frustrations is, in spite of 20-plus years of working with curanderas in northern Peru and participating in medicine ceremonies, because, as you know, it's all about sacred plant medicine, I had drunk gallons of San Pedro. I had participated in ayahuasca ceremonies. You know, I'd seen lots of pretty lights. You know, I'd seen, I'd really had the whole psychedelic trip multiple times. But that's not what I was looking for, and that's not what I never had until you and I did ceremony together in South Florida, really a chance to peek behind the veil. And what I saw when I peeked behind the veil is this. You asked me to go outside and sit in your backyard around and sit at your medicine wheel. And as I did, I was very lucid, and it felt like midday. I was awake. I was calm. I was focused. I was centered. I was very lucid. I sat in that chair. I opened my eyes, and I saw the grass in your lawn bowing to me. Every individual blade of grass honoring my presence and bowing to me. And I could do nothing but bow back. And I looked around at the palm trees that are overlook your land, and you had a hedge at that time, and they were also honoring me and waving. And then I looked back, and where peripheral vision, I saw the blades of grass kind of having these little conversations with each other. They were literally turning and facing one another and having conversations. And as I turned back, it's like everything turned back to me. And we just continued bowing to one another, probably for 10 or 15 minutes. And what I realized, first of all, was the sentience, the consciousness of every element of the natural world. And second of all, the deep connection and the relatedness that we have, and the fact that what we do is received and matters. So as we act with love and kindness, we receive love and kindness. The earth responds. And that was a pivotal moment for me. It was like, oh my gosh, I really am connected to something greater than myself. It's a blade of grass. That's huge. And that, for me, allowed me to move into this place where I found that I could no longer teach anthropology the way that I had been teaching it. The way that I had been teaching it was to honor and respect, certain, I would say respect more than honor, respect what indigenous people say about their relationships with the natural world when they talk about animals and stones as relatives, and they talk about star relatives. I had always respected that from a place of cultural relativism, learning not to judge it, but not really taking it deeply for what it really means, the fact that indigenous peoples are telling us the truth, right? But once I had that moment and I recognized that consciousness structures matter, not the other way around, you know, that completely flipped the way that I teach anthropology, and it made me want to provide a space to have deep relationships, connective relationships with my own students. And so that's why I began teaching the shamanism class to my own students. I started teaching the Pachacuti Mesa tradition to my own students. That's why I'm now involved in an interfaith dialogue project at my home university, where in essence I'm encouraging people to assess what needs to change on our campus so we can bring our whole selves to the table. so that we can relate with one another as spiritual beings as well as academic beings. And the transformation that you mentioned that I'm seeing as a result of simply opening up the dialogue and asking the question, is something missing and what would you like that you don't have, is amazing. I just got back today from a roundtable discussion that I held a couple of hours ago with faculty and students and administrators and staff, where I had faculty saying, you know, the fact that I'm a Lutheran deacon and that I serve my church by leading church services, and then I come and I teach in a class in science and I feel that I can't share that with my students because they're going to think I don't believe in global warming or, you know, culture change. I mean, what am I trying to say? Climate change. You know, that really diminishes who I am. And so what we've been doing and what became possible through that transformative experience myself of recognizing that deep bowing that we do in namaste to one another and not just two-leggeds, that really has allowed for this flowering that is taking both my university and the country by storm.
Awesome. Truly, truly magnificent. And we will be alive when it truly reaches that tipping point. And that's the wonderful thing about it. It may sound a little self-centered on my part that I still want to be breathing as a two-legged when the big shift occurs. Yet, you know, it's the best game in town. And I feel that, you know, after all of the service work we both have done and so many other beautiful brothers and sisters in our tradition, as well as the people from the Shift Network and all of the luminaries that are gathering together far and wide, the dreaming that is a true informing in the material structure of our universe, not just of planet Earth, but of our universe, of our Akashic shared field, of the prophecies of our ancient ones, of this coming time that you and I know as the Taripaipacha, the age of re-encounter, where exactly what you're saying, where the sharing, the breaking of bread together at the table of the world teacher, which is really oneself, capital S, will take place among people from all skin colors, ideological persuasions, religious inclinations, or cultural backgrounds. And you see it happening. And you see it in the emergence of the brown-skinned people. And there is much to be said regarding the encounter, the moment of tinkui, as you and I know, of that coming together of opposites, like you facilitated in this class with the academicians you just said, in which there's a struggle, an inner struggle, that prevents them from being real and authentic as an example of transformation in their classroom. And so the moments of that encounter where the armor can be let down and dissolved, which happens so often in the council process that we practice in Pachakutik Mesa Shamanism and that you also replicate in your meetings, that allows for the true meaning of all our relations to be a living truth, a visceral bodily expression of the sanctity that is life as an interdependent whole. And this is what's so exciting, and we're going to be around to see the big shift in a way that will bring healing, peace, and the restoration of wholeness on individual and collective levels globally. So may the Pachakuti that we're in, sister, and all of the turmoil that we see around us and in far regions of this planet, be honored for what it is, catastrophe, not denied, not be feared, be embraced as part of who we are, may you go ahead and comment on any tools, practices, any type of, you know, hands-on gifts that you may have come up with yourself or learned through your shamanic experiences that are simple, that our listening audience can use as a takeaway, something that you would recommend them to do as part of their daily living.
Mm. Well, first of all, just amen to everything that you said. I think that's just a beautiful summation. And as we know, consciousness does structure matter. And so by embracing the change, by embracing the chaos, by embracing, as you said, the catastrophe, and recognizing it for the tinkui, the violent coming together, the stirring of the pot that it is, as our beloved brother Jason Blazing is fond of saying, mm-hmm. you know, and as I know he has learned this from you, you really don't get new growth until you turn the soil, right? Until you are willing to turn the soil and break up the hard crust, the hard outer crust, you cannot have new growth. And in the planting season, and those of our listeners who, you know, are farmers or small-scale gardeners, they know that moment of turning the soil, it breaks up that placid surface. But it's a necessary stirring that will allow new seeds that are planted to take root. And so it should, in fact, be embraced. So thank you
and
for that.
And that is what shamanic initiation, that's what shamanic mm-hmm. initiation is all about, sister. Mm-hmm. Thank you mm-hmm. for being a catalyst of that in the academic settings that you inhabit. So we can move into that a little later, but before our time is up, I would like you to offer, you know, anything that surfaces from within you, a thought, a wisdom, a practice that you feel is good medicine for our listeners.
Mm. Well, what's coming to mind, and this isn't meant as a plug for our book, but our book contains great wisdom and great practices to bring it home.
And I'll plug it. I have no problem. I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Everything from, and again, you know, in the five chapters of our very, very succinct, very small text, each chapter ends with some practices that people can do at home in their own life. And as you have mentioned several times, it all starts with the breathing. Right? It all starts with being conscious of our breath and stilling ourselves and breathing deeply in and out and consciously tuning in and using the power of our imagination as imago, right? Not as fantasy, mm-hmm. but as image, mm-hmm. using the power of our image making to be able to draw in as we open ourselves the divine celestial light, and to also draw in the rootedness to our Mother Earth, and to be able to feel that connection and ourselves as an axis mundi, as a tree of life, as a center pole, to be able to claim that space of being in the center, and to be able to fill ourselves. So many of us, I think women in particular, but I think men also, we spend so much of our days giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, and if we are not replenishing our life force energy by allowing ourselves to receive what is deeply given from other worlds and from the worlds within that connects us to our higher self, we become quickly depleted. So it starts with the breathing, to be able to just sit quietly and with every in-breath picture breathing in the spirit of life, and with every out-breath picturing ourselves offering gratitude to the world for every experience that has come our way. And that breathing can go a long ways towards moving us into a place where we reconnect with life force energy in a way that gives us the strength to end the time and the balance and the peace and the focus to be able to do the other practices that are necessary for us to really claim our birthright as co-creators of the new earth. The only other thing that I would say that comes to mind and that was deeply transformative for me, and perhaps it's because of my role and my experience in being a woman. Again, I think women are so generally socialized to being caregivers, to being the nurturers, giving, 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 giving. That when we think about the golden rule, often we talk about, you know, you get what you give. You have to give first in order to get, right? And one of the things that was so important for me to realize was that we also have to open ourselves to receive. The more deeply we are willing to open ourselves to receive the blessings of the perfect moment, the blessings of the natural world, the blessings of relationship, the more we are willing to receive the love that is extended to us, if we simply attune to it, the more we are able to give. So that sense of sacred reciprocity, that engine of Aini, as we talk about, is definitely requires giving and receiving. But the most powerful practice that I have ever engaged in is simply walking, aside from the breathing, is simply walking in a park near my home and coming to trees, and with every tree I come to, saying, first, I deeply receive you. I deeply receive your medicine. I am so grateful to be able to receive the gift of your oxygen today. And once I open myself to receiving, then I find myself more buoyant. I find myself more filled with gratitude, the attitude of gratitude, as you so lovingly refer to it. And I find myself more focused and centered to be able to be the blessing to the world that we all are.
Precioso. Te adoro, mujer. So, my dearest, we're getting close to our completed time. I'd like you, as well as I, to tell the listening audience, good people on this call, that if they'd like to know more about your work, what website they could visit, or anything that is up on the, you know, on the horizon for you, such as the we're planning to co-facilitate as well as facilitate on our own, which I've already been doing, a one-day intensive, an all-day initiation into the five sacred principles of lessons in courage, Peruvian shamanic wisdom for everyday life, that is based on the five chapters of trusting soul, honoring spirit, opening heart, transforming mind, and healing body, which correspond to the five directions of the Pachacuti Mission. So Bonnie will be offering this program after I finish consolidating some of the teaching materials in a manner that will make it easier for both of us to do it and serve as many people as possible over the next few years. And you can find information about that at heartofthehealer.org, heartofthehealer.org, all one word. And Bonnie has a website also that you can find out about her activities. And what is that, Bonnie?
That website is bonnieglasscoffin.com. Just bonnieglasscoffin.com. And I definitely would invite people to come and check out the website. And on that website, they can learn more about the work that I'm doing on university campuses, and they can also find links to our book as they can in going to the Heart of the Healer website. I would just like to take a moment and say thank you so much, Don Oscar, for giving me the opportunity to chat with you. As always, my beloved brother, you are in my heart and my thoughts, and I just feel so connected to you and to this great work, and so honored to be a part of it, and I look forward to whatever the next steps may be. Blessings, blessings, blessings to all of us.
As you say, Turai, pachis, pachis, pachis. So, sister, are you still there?
Yes.
I'd like you to offer the final words to our listening audience by answering this, it's one of those lead-in questions, okay? If you wouldn't mind just filling the blanks. So the lead-in question is this. In my personal experience, what universal shamanism means is, and we're going to end our interview with that answer.
In my personal experience, what universal shamanism means is love.
Yes, you said. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Looking forward to our next encounter, sister. Adios.
Adios, I love you. Thank you.
Ciao.
Bye.